At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is 93.7 The Ticket.
Look at me, short. Look at me, short. I'm the captain now.
Three-time national champion, Vershawn Jackson.
Oh, I got a bunch. All alone is Vershawn Jackson. And Vershawn, he'll get it to the 24-yard line.
Coming at you live from the Copples Chevrolet GMC studios in the heart of Lincoln, America. On air and online at theticketfm.com. Presented by Wingstop. Here he is, Vershawn Jackson.
Ah, yeah!
Yes. It's another day at the office. We're at Wingstop Live with Coach Osborne. Bach is here. Mr. Farley, the black shirt, is here.
Good morning.
Can I call him the black shirt coach?
Sure.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
I just want to know if I earned the right to be called a black shirt coach.
I would say many times over.
Thank you, sir. It's a great honor to have you here today, Coach.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Absolutely. So, Coach, we at Wingstop. I know I am going to go right into it. It's game week. There's 2 days in the wake up, and then it'll be game time in Dublin. If you were preparing for a game, what would Monday look like and what would the week look like?
Well, probably, Vershawn, on a normal week, you haven't had a whole lot of time because you played the previous Saturday. And with the first game, that's not true. You know, you've got a better part of 4 weeks to get ready. And so it's probably a little different. But normally on a Monday, normal season game, you'd probably put in anything new that you were going to put in, offensive, defensive. Probably be in helmets and shoulder pads. You wouldn't do a whole lot of hitting, but a pretty thorough practice, but more mental. And then after that, Tuesday, Wednesday were really hard practices. Full pads, some contact. Thursday, back off a little bit, sweat clothes. And then Friday, just kind of a walk through. So we always tried to work hard in the middle of the week and then get them back by Friday, Saturday, and have their legs under them. And so, but it'll be a little different over there. And, of course, they're adjusting to a new environment. There'll be some sightseeing, and you're hoping the players don't get distracted too much. And but I've been down and watched them a couple times, and they look the part more than they have. And I think Scott feels fairly confident, and I would have to echo his sentiments that this is a better football team. The schedule's probably, you never know, you know, how strong the schedule's going to be, but at least on paper, looks a little more favorable than last year.
When you look at this game, if you were going to script the first 5 plays, what would you script?
Well, I'd probably, I'll just tell you what I normally did. We usually scripted the first 13, 14 plays, and we'd probably be in a different formation every play. And because you'll normally find that a team will focus more on certain things. And if we found that we came out in a formation and they didn't seem to be lined up very well against it, then we'd make mental note of that and then come back to it and start attacking them in areas that they seem to be a little bit weak when they lined up. Now, how Whipple will approach the game, I don't know. Have no idea. But I think probably somewhat similarly. He'll probably be in several formations early and give them some motion and some shifting and just see if there's some things that he – but, you know, you're going to find that Northwestern defensively will be pretty sound. They're not going to line up and beat themselves, and they usually have pretty good players up front. And so the big thing, I think, in this game is going to be turnovers. Nebraska probably will have a better team. But if you go minus 2 turnovers, it's anybody's ball game. You go minus 3 turnovers, and you're probably going to lose. And so that's always the nerve-wracking thing, particularly in a first game, because you're not totally sure how people are going to react under a game situation.
When you're talking about turnovers, how many points to you is a turnover worth? Is that worth any points? Is it worth 3 points? You know what I mean? In the grand scheme of a game, when you turn that ball over, is that – do most teams turn those into points?
Yeah, I would think it'd be worth somewhere in the 4 or 5 point range, because if you don't turn it over and you just punt the ball, that's 40 yards that you're going to pick up. And that's the thing that people don't really understand about football, is field position is a big deal. And you sit in the stands and it doesn't really register with you. But I used to be on the college football playoff selection committee, and we had all kinds of data. But the thing that I eventually came to focus on was primarily field position and what happened every change of possessions. And usually the top four teams at the end of the year were +4, +5, +6 yards every time there was a change of possessions. And sometimes, and that was a lot of it was kicking, sometimes it was turnovers, sometimes it was penalties, but they just operated more efficiently. And in the course of a game, if you pick up 5 yards per change of possessions and there's 15 possessions, you know, that adds up to 7 to 10 points. And so usually the top four teams at the end of the year that go into the college football playoff are going to be people who are pretty efficient, and they have a good kicking game. And I think this year there's been a lot more focus on kicking. And I think Bill Bush will be quite a fine addition there. I think they're putting their best players out there. You know, we used to have Terrell, and we had guys that could run and tackle. And so, you know, we just felt, and we had guys like Grant Wistrom on the punt team, and these are guys who were All-American and maybe going to be first-round draft picks. But we felt that the kicking game was so critical that you had to have your best players on the field.
What was that, when you talk about that point total, what is the kicking game point total worth to you as far as, you know, the different facets of the game?
Well, there's another team out there too. So if they have a good kicking game and you have a good kicking game, it's probably a net zero. But if they have a real good kicking game and you don't, then you're probably -10, -14 points. And if you look at last year, we fair caught the ball almost every punt return. And so we were losing probably 7 to 10 yards per exchange just on no punt return. And I think they've got better punt returners this year, some guys that they're pretty confident in. And so if you can break one or two during the season and then get substantial returns steadily throughout the game, it's going to make a big difference.
Now, Coach, they asked Scott Frost to take a CEO role. Now, mm-hmm. the CEO role as a head coach, is that walking from station to station to station to station every day, checking on players, and how did that go when they asked you to take that CEO role?
Well, I'm not sure what that means exactly, but it means – number one, that he probably won't be calling the plays. And you know, if you're calling the plays, then you really have to immerse yourself in the offense. And I probably spent 30 hours a week looking at film, and quite often by myself, to try to get a feel for how that opposing defensive coordinator was going to behave in different situations. If it's third and long, and we're down deep in our own territory, what's he going to do? If we're on the third down and 5 going in, what's he going to do? And so you begin to get a feel for the game. And so Scott will be freed up more to relate to the players, go around, visit with them, spend a little time with them in the weight room, and probably will be able to sit in once in a while with the defense. I tried to sit in with the defense 1 hour every morning, and we look at the preceding day's practice. So I was pretty much up to speed on what happened the day before and what we were going to do. But if you're immersing yourself in the offense, that's a full-time job. That's probably about 80 hours in a week. And you probably spend 90, sometimes 100 hours getting ready for a game. So it's a job where you don't sleep a whole lot.
I know that's right, Coach. So, Coach, by the time my senior year came, 1997, it didn't seem to me that you used the, like, you know, you see the coaches with the play cards and they got them real small. And they got, when you called the plays, were those plays called from the top of your mind, or did you kind of know what you were going to call? I mean, as the game progressed.
Well, I mentioned that I tried to look at a lot of film. And, you know, we did have a game sheet, a chart, and long yardage, goal line, long yardage, short yardage, all these things. But eventually that ended up in my back pocket. and so I tried to have a good enough feel for the way the game was going, what the guy was going to do on the other side, that I was able to do it quickly. And so we didn't run a hurry-up, no-huddle offense. But we tried to run pretty fast. We tried to make sure that we snapped the ball with at least 14, 15 seconds left on the game clock. And if we did that, we put more pressure on that defense to get lined up. We began to wear them down. And usually by the fourth quarter, with a good running game, good offensive line, we were, you know, those 4 or 5 yard plays in the first quarter were turned into 7, 8, 9 yards. And so tried to run plays pretty quickly. And if you're constantly looking at a sheet and you're trying to figure out what to do and then you get the play called, you're slowing things down too much.
Did you get – obviously you got better over time. Okay, so how important is it able to adjust on the fly?
Well, I think it's critical that you be able to adjust because eventually if you come out and start hurting people with something, they're going to adjust. And then you have to be able to adjust to their adjustment. And oftentimes that went on mostly at halftime. But, you know, I had good people upstairs. Milt Tanneper was on the phone and Frank Solich. And so we were constantly communicating as to what we were seeing. And usually the worst seat in the house is what the football coach has, because he's standing on the sideline. And so sometimes I'd look out there and all I would see would be 4, 5, 6 defensive players. But from that, I had to figure out what they were actually lined up in, because I didn't have the overview from up above. But I was able to talk to Milt and others, and that was very helpful.
First play of the game, tight right, 42 dive.
Well, it could be. Who knows?
No, I'm saying if okay, we got your best offense out there. What's your call? First play of the game.
Well, we playing
Northwestern.
Okay. Well, I don't know. My guess is that you come with something that you know, a pitch play averaged about 6 yards, 7 yards a play. And that's where we pulled the onside guard and the fullback filled up in there. So I'd say something like that would be first play and just see how they line up. And sometimes people fool you, because I remember one time we played Kansas, and it was about the 8th or 9th game of the season, and we looked at every game they played, every snap they took. And they came out in a 8-man front, and their defensive backs were within 2 yards of the line of scrimmage, something we'd never seen before, you know, and they'd never shown it. And so we're kind of scrambling at that point as to where we go. But the thing about it, that over time, we sort of had a collective memory. We'd say, well, you know, we saw something like this 4 years ago when we played TCU, and we know this hurt them. And so institutional knowledge is very helpful, and that's really good to have an experienced staff that's been together for a long period of time.
We go out, we win the toss. Mm-hmm. What do you do? You receive or you kick off?
Well, probably the first thing that if you win the toss, you're gonna take the football. And if you lose the toss and they take the football, then obviously you're going to defend. But then you have the nice thing is you have the ball then in the at start the second half. And usually by the second half, you're a little bit better into the game, you know, a little bit more what you're going to see. Because a lot of people don't change much from the first half to the second half. Now, we tried to adjust quite a bit during the halftime, and we oftentimes would come out and doing some stuff almost entirely different than what we showed in the first half, and I think that was always advantageous for us.
Now, Coach, on the defensive side today, I read they only gave out 9 black shirts. What I mean, my feeling towards that is that 11 black shirts should be given out for the game because mm-hmm. you got 11 starters, and I think one of their excuses was that the player has never started a game here before. Is that a big concern for you that they only gave out 9 black shirts?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a concern one way or another. I suppose what they're trying to get at is that you have to reach a certain level of performance and proficiency to earn a black shirt, and they must have had a couple guys that they thought were the best at their position, but they still weren't performing quite like they wanted. And so that can serve as motivation. But on the other hand, you might say, well, I'm one of only 2 guys out there without a black shirt.
I think you kind of make them feel left out.
How good am I, you know? So that's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
And but we usually handed out about 11, sometimes 12 or 13 black shirts because we'd have a nickel back or somebody that would go out there and play as many snaps, but he wouldn't necessarily be the starter, you know. But, you know, it's just a matter of how coaches want to interpret things.
Now, me and Vijay had a debate the other day. How many black shirts did
you?
Just at the end of the year. You said, you said 11 to 12. But I think, like, when we played, we had, like, around 15 to 17 black shirts mm-hmm. at the end of the year.
Well, I knew we had more than 11. I didn't know we had 15 to 17.
So. Well, we had Phil and Doug that were starting. Then they were switching in and out. Then you had me and Twilliger. We were switching in and out. Jamel and Jay Foreman. Mm-hmm. So that was like, that's 6 right there. That's just the linebackers groups.
Right.
So you're thinking of the DBs with the 4. And then you probably add Eric Stokes, mm-hmm. you know, because he was, you know, basically like a starter to us. And then on the defensive line, so I'm counting at least 13 to 14.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd say 13, 14. Easy, maybe 15, yeah. But, again, I guess you're just looking at players. Have they risen to a certain level of proficiency? And do you feel like you can put them out there and you're not going to drop off hardly at all? You know, they're a starter, even though they may not have started the game, they're playing like a starter. And and I imagine that'll happen this year, too. I imagine that next game you'll probably see 11 black shirts, and maybe eventually you'll see 12 or 13. But we really had some good players, too, though. And we were very strong on defense and very strong on offense, and that made a big difference. And, of course, a guy like you, you're fast. You could cover backs out of the backfield, you know. And then you also held up well against the run, and you were our best punt blocker. You know, you blocked 4 or 5 punts every season, and so you're a very versatile player, and helps to have a guy like that around.
Coach, how important? What is a black shirt? What does that mean to you? Just being a black shirt.
Well, I guess you know. I'll tell you a story how it came about. I was here when Bob Devaney came here, and we had a lot of players. You know, at that time the Big 8 Conference, you could give out 45 scholarships a year, and there was no upper limit. So you had 150, 160 guys on scholarship, and that was one of the strengths of the Big 8 because we had more players on scholarship than anybody else. But anyway, you'd have 4 teams, 4 offensive teams, 4 defensive teams. And so they always put the offense in red jerseys. And then defensively, Mike Corgan went down to the sporting goods store and he bought pullover jerseys. And he bought some black jerseys and some gold jerseys and some green jerseys and some white jerseys. And the first team got black shirts and the second team had gold and the third had green and the fourth had white. And that was simply for contrast. And then somehow eventually people said, they started calling black shirts go here, black shirts go there. And it came to mean more than just a pullover jersey. But that went clear back to 1962. And what the sporting goods store happened to had in terms of pullover jerseys. So it wasn't anything magical, just something that happened.
It just happened. Listen, we're at Wingstop. www.wingstop.com, 29th and Pine Lake Road. Coach Osborne's here. The Black Shirt's here. Colvin's here. Rob is here. Carl is here. They all looking all types of wild wings. So get down here now. We'll be right back with Coach Osborne.
Saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week.
Save